Good morning, we're on Shmuel Bet. We're learning the third parak, parak Gimel. It's actually the third week learning parak Gimel. We're up to Pasuk Yud Dalid, which in our packet is page 216. We left off last week discussing how a very powerful man by the name of Avner felt slighted and completely insulted by the quote-unquote king, Ishbosheth, which he didn't really think extremely highly of. After all, Ishbosheth was not a man of war. He was not a man who fought. If he was a man who was of war or who fought, he would have died together with his father Shaul and his three brothers on the battlefield. But because he, of course, was the son of Shaul, he ends up becoming the next king, at least a part of Israel. And because Avner was slighted by him, he was insulted, he said, "That's it, I don't need this anymore. After all the things that I did for you and for your father, easily Shaul could have been killed many times by David if it wasn't for me. I don't need this." And therefore, he goes to David. And of course, it's not just one man going to David, but when you have such a powerful person such as Avner siding with David, it's obviously extremely favorable for him, to the point that ultimately we will be seeing shortly that David will reign over all of Klal Yisrael, all the Jewish nation, and that Ishbosheth will be an afterthought. So here we are in Pasuk Yud Dalid. Pasuk Yud Dalid begins, "V'yishlach David malachim," that David sent messengers, "el Ishbosheth ben Shaul lemor," to Ishbosheth, the son of Shaul, saying, "To Noas Ishti as Michal, give back my wife Michal, who I haven't seen for so many years, the wife, my first wife, the wife I love so much. Asher Erasti Li," Erasti is translated to the Sion as Lashon Arusa, which is synonymous with Kedushin. "I betrothed her, we were married, but Mea Aralos pleased him." He didn't give her a beautiful shining diamond ring, instead he decided to give her Mea Aralos, 100 foreskins.
What do you do with that?
Which, well, what can you do? There's always next year. The significance behind the Mea Aralos, which you would think is probably not the most flattering or thoughtful gift, you have to understand that this is the daughter of a king, which means that when it comes to diamonds, all she had to do was open
everything.
She had everything you could possibly imagine. The only thing that was possibly lacking was loyalty. And therefore, by David attacking the Plishtim, the symbolism of the Aralos obviously means that he killed them. And therefore, it showed that he was completely loyal, a loyal subject to Shaul. He was willing to do whatever it takes. And therefore, I am not a man who is mored by Malchus. I'm not a man who rebelled against the king. On the contrary, I'm there to fight his battles. I'm there to help him and to defeat his enemies. And therefore, bring back this woman to me. Now, the Radak points out that it's interesting that he sends this message to Ishbosheth. After all, we saw the previous pasuk that when Avner was interested in joining the side of David, Pasuk Yud Gimel told us that he said, "You can come, but I do not want to see your face unless you bring Michal to me." Which means that he already asked a very powerful person, Avner, to do it. So why then, the next pasuk, does he have to send Ishbosheth? It seems to be a waste of a message. After all, Avner has the capacity and ability to do so. Why is it necessary for him to ask Ishbosheth? So on this, the Radak answers this question, and that it was more of a political move of David. Says the Radak, he says, "Afal pi sheshalach Avner," even though he already sent Avner to do the same goal, the same mission, "shalach gam kein l'Ishbosheth," he also sent Ishbosheth to do so, "l'chavdo," to honor him, "shal ratzo l'kachta b'lo reshuso," because Avner would be willing to do it. Avner has this tension. He maybe would be able to take her, but that would only cause more problems. And David was not interested in sacrificing many, many Jewish people on a battlefield, a future war, because of him taking his wife back. And therefore he wanted to make sure that everything he did was the up and up. And that's why he wanted each Boshes to be okay with it. The other idea of this was, Avner, as we've seen, was constantly feeling that he was the one that deserved to be the king. After all, I'm a powerful man. Ishbosheth is a nobody. He became the king de facto, as we said, comparable to walking a dog. Was Avner who was pulling the strings, and that Ishbosheth was but a marionette, and the person above is the one that's really in control. Now, that's how Avner felt. And therefore, David maybe sensed that, so much so that, as we mentioned last week, that the letter that Avner wrote, he wrote in a very inappropriate way. He wrote his name, Avner's name, up top, then David's, as though to, again, give the perception that I'm even greater than you. That was the message that maybe he was showing.
David,
maybe
it was, then David's name?
Because what he did was Avner wrote a letter saying, I want to join you, I want to come with you to in peace. But when you write a letter to a king, you first write the king's name, then somewhere on the very bottom or the middle, you somehow put your name in there. You don't put your name before the king, and that's what he did.
How do we know that?
That's how Rashi mentioned that on page 214, it was brought down to Davar Acher, based on the word tachtav,
right,
which is written and read differently, so it hints that there was something, that he did something wrong, that his name was not underneath, but rather was above. It was David's name was Tachtav, which it shouldn't have been. So, and that was on the bottom of page 214 of the Rashi. But therefore, maybe this is also the Radakas teaching us here, that what was happening was that David realized this struggle, this conflict between Avner and Ishbosheth, and he wasn't interested in getting in between it. And therefore, he didn't want Avner to think that what you say matters, but rather I have to answer to your king, or the person that you showed allegiance to, namely to Ishbosheth. So that's how the Radak explains this. And Masudas David says a little bit differently. And Masudas David here says, V'yishlach David, ki hoya atah batuach, because now he had faith, belief, asher Avner yimaleh es devaro, that Avner would fulfill his words. So it could be that he was kind of hedging his bets over here, that in addition to asking Avner, he now asking Ishbosheth, he would be 100% sure that everything would happen, namely that he would get his wife back that he longed for so many years, but unfortunately Shaul took her away from him. Okay.
Now he was certain that Avner would fulfill it.
Right.
Why? I mean, how does that show that he asked
Ishbosheth?
I don't understand the answer there.
Well, it could be because now Avner would feel that he had to do it once that Ishbosheth also knew about it,
right,
and he was still the king. Maybe Avner was now put in a position where if he didn't think he would do it before, then he would have to do it now because it was like public knowledge.
Right. It's very, very good.
Very good.
Thank you. That's probably the correct way of reading this, Masudas David. Thank you. Pasuk Tesvav. Pasuk Tesvav tells us, Vayishlach Ishbosheth. So Ishbosheth sent her. It doesn't say that Avner did. Vayi kocheha mi'im ish. And she was taken from the ish, which means from her husband. What do you mean her husband was David? Well, as we saw, it was not David. It was David. Unfortunately, Shaul fell. David was a dead man walking, to the point that even though he's alive, since you rebel against the king, it's like you don't exist. And therefore now, I am going to force Michal, my daughter, to marry someone else. So therefore, she separates from him, Me'im Paltiel ben Laish. Okay, we'll explain, we'll get back to that. Let's just see one more pasuk. So that was the guy's name, Paltiel ben Laish. And you can imagine the feeling of Paltiel, who spent numerous days and years with Michal. So what would his emotions be? Would he be happy that he would be separating from this his wife? Let's see what Pasuk Tes Zayin says. Vayelach ita isha haloch uvach achreha ad b'churin. So the Pasuk says that this man, Paltiel, accompanied her, and the pasuk says, "Uvacho achareha." He cried continuously, a man of emotion who could find Ad Bahure, all the way until this place. Yamri Lav Avner Lech Shuv V'Yashuv. So Avner, who was there, which is interesting, it said Ishbosheth sent him, but Avner was still there, which again showed that he was still taking some orders. He was not the number one guy. So Avner said, "Go back," and in fact, V'Yashuv, he did so. So you can imagine the feelings of sorrow that Paltiel felt, that he now had to part from his wife and have to give this woman Michal back to David. But that's not how the Mefarshim explains. We'll see.
How does Hanukkah enter into all of this in terms of married women? Well, we don't know that, or
they've
really been divorced, and so on and so forth.
So, the symbolism, as possibly what David was trying to do, was not just for him to take back Michal, but because the issue is that, let's say, in the event, what happened was, it's as though he was dead. But assuming that, let's say, it would be like a divorce, there's a halacha of Master Grushaso, you're allowed to remarry the person that you divorced, provided that there was no one married in between. Right. So,
she wasn't married. He could marry in between.
I'm talking, right. So, in this situation, but she was married to someone in between. But the only reason why it would have been a valid marriage is only if he was a dead man, halachically, which means that he was more of a malchus, that he rebelled against the king. That's the only way she is allowed to remarry. If the person, in fact, is more of a malchus, then, in fact, this woman is allowed to marry, because her husband, who is still alive, he's really not alive. He's somewhere hiding, running around. But if a king declares that you're dead, even though you're still walking around the face of the earth. Doesn't matter. So therefore, what David was doing by taking her back was more than just reacquainting and reconnecting to the woman that he loved. He's also making a statement.
I'm alive.
Not just, I'm a statement, I'm alive.
I'm alive.
And I'm not just me. Avner is making the statement. The son of Shaul, by giving her back to me, is making a statement. That statement is, my father was wrong. Shaul should not have given this woman to Paltiel. And by the virtue of the fact that he does this, it shows that that second marriage was never anything. It was invalid. What?
In an old marriage.
Something along those lines, right? It meant nothing. It wasn't real. Because retroactively, we now see that he was always still married to her. And therefore, that's another reason why David was trying to show this, that he did nothing wrong. That he, in fact, always showed allegiance to Shaul. And as we mentioned also last week, it's fascinating, as we're going to see in the Mefarshim in a couple of psukim from now, that it mentions Michal in Pasuk Gimel, and it says Michal Bas Shaul. Like, we didn't know that. We didn't know that her father was the king. And then the pasuk that we read a couple moments ago, that Ishbosheth was sent the message. But who was Ishbosheth? The pasuk says Ishbosheth ben Shaul. We know this. We know this information. Why is he repeating it? But what David is trying to, again, point out is this connection, this relationship between Ishbosheth and your father. So what you do right now, by you sending her back, it's not just your action, but you're actually making a statement about your father, that he was wrong in having me separate from her and saying that I was in fact more malchus, which in fact I was not. So that's the possible approach of why all this happened. Now, but we have to understand still the tremendous emotions and feelings. You have to be sensitive to this poor guy. You know, he loved Michal so much that it wasn't that he just separated from her. The pasuk says explicitly, "Uvacho achareha ad bechurim." He kept crying and crying like a little baby all the time. The whole time, the moments, he knew, I only have a few more moments. I have 10 more minutes with my wife, 5 more minutes. And then finally he has to separate. Why did he separate? Avner said, "Get out of here," implying that maybe Avner would never have, without Avner there giving that order, maybe he wouldn't have been able to physically part from her. You loved her so much.
But I find it interesting they don't even mention how she feels.
It's not important.
They don't
show
her anything. They took her from her husband.
Right. I mean, you know, her emotions.
She, unfortunately... So, to answer, it's a very good question. Now we're gonna see Rashi, which will give us maybe, and then the Radak will also elaborate on this a little bit more. That what was really going on and why Paltiel ben Laish was really crying will give us a different perspective. Rashi says over here in Pasuk Tet Zayin that Holuch Uvacho, that he went, he was crying. But he wasn't crying because he was going to miss this wife. Because Paltiel ben Laish was a tremendous tzaddik. What do you mean that he was a tremendous tzaddik? What do you mean? After all, he married David's wife. He shouldn't have done so. We have to understand, this was a king that gave him specific orders. A king who hated David. He had no choice but to marry her. He wasn't given the option of deciding not to. He had to marry Michal. And Michal had no choice. This was being ordered by the king, who wanted to make a statement about David, who he felt was a direct threat. So says Rashi, and then we'll see the Radak, which elaborates upon this further. Why was he crying? Al mitzvah halechas mimenu, because of a squandered opportunity that he'll no longer have the ability to perform a mitzvah which he always has been performing while Michal was there. What was that mitzvah? Shekol osen hashanim, all the years that he was forced to have to pretend that he was married to this woman Michal, which he didn't want to, and she didn't want to. So what did he do to make a statement to make sure that he would not do anything which he shouldn't? He had a nice bed, maybe it was a king-sized bed, and between the bed he had a sharp blade in between. It was like a machitza of some sort, but a blade.
And that's where he slept on the marika?
He didn't sleep on the sword. He'd be all cut up.
Didn't they have double beds?
I don't know. And hopefully he doesn't roll over and cut himself. So he should not stumble upon us. He should not.
That was the obstacle.
That. So what's the significance of this?
He also had another wife and children.
Who, Paltiel?
Yes.
We don't find anything about this. That we don't see any. We don't really know more than the Mefarshim explain, which all we know is this episode that Rashi brings down, which is actually Gemara, so it's difficult to contradict what a Gemara says, but the symbolism of the sword is some type of a visual aid for him to be able to look at, some type of external stimuli for him to realize that he has absolutely no right to take her, which means that Paltiel realized that David always was married, and that it was wrong for him to be with her. And therefore, Paltiel is actually a breakup of two words. Is it brought down here in the English? Palti, it means that a person who was spared or saved. Kael, Hashem saved or spared him. And there, and Ben Laish is another word for a lion, which corresponds to the Yetzer Hara. That he had the ability for all those years to be able to conquer his Yetzer Hara. Says the Radak, quoting the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Lefikach Karu Ato Paltiel. This is why now his name was changed from Palti to Paltiel, with God's name attached to him. Shepaltu El Miavera, that he was spared, that God spared him from sin. Shulbal Michal, that he did not have relations with her, which it would have been prohibited because David is alive. Kamoshi Pirashna Lamal, as it's explained previously, Ama Sha'amar, that which it says, Halachu Vacho Achoreha Ad Bechorim. Why was he crying? He wasn't crying because he couldn't part from her. It was the opposite. He was crying Al Mitzvah Shaholchum Yadav, the lost opportunity, the Shahoya Kovesh Yitzro, because all of those years he had the ability to conquer his liish, his lion, the Yetzirah, which he was able to dominate over. Ad Bechurim Sha'asa Ki Bechurim. What does it mean that he went to Bechurim? Bechurim has the same word as like a Bechor, a young little child, an innocent child, Shotayim Otav Osochet, who has not ever experienced that particular sin. The Chol Zeh Hu Rachuk Mederech Hapshat. However, the Radak says that's kind of far away from the simple explanation of what Bechurim means, and therefore he says Bechurim Hu Shemakom Be'eretz Binyamin. Bechurim sounds more logically, it's the name of a place in the land of Binyamin. But again, this is what Paltiel, the Mefarshim, explained the greatness of what he did. And what it means is not that we're supposed to put ourselves into a nisayon. You're not allowed to put yourself into a challenge because you may not pass that test. But he had no choice but to be in that nisayon. He conquered it, and therefore, every single moment that it's already been conquered, he was Kovish Yisitzro, so every moment that he stays in that situation, and where there's no longer really a nisayon for him, because he was somehow able to get over that hurdle, he would be getting more and more zechutim, more and more mitzvot. And therefore, because of that, now that she's separating, he lost that connection of that mitzvah. Now, some of them.
The English has. Yes.
That's a way that we can get around all the fun stuff we're talking about, which is certainly acceptable, and it sounds, by reading the text, very logical that that's what's happening. But according to the way that we're interpreting it, which is actually a text, it's textually based, it's a Gemara that says this, some explain this thing, why a sword? Because... Yeah, the Gemara says that any person that, you know, if I have relations with this woman, then this sword should cut me. That's what the Gemara, the actual language of the Gemara, I'll read it, says, Uma asa nafscher beino veina, Omar, and he said in his mind, kol osik bedavar zeh, anyone who's involved in this wrong activity, yadakir becherv zeh, should be killed with this sword. And the problem with that is when it comes to the punishments in the good old days, where you can get stoned or burned or hung or the sword. So there's all different forms of punishment based on the crime that you committed. So the question that the Mefarshim ask is, when it comes to Ashes Ish, a person who commits adultery, the punishment is not the sword. The punishment is chenek, strangulation. Right? It's a good thing to know. But one of the problems with that is that why would he have a sword? I guess it'd be kind of ridiculous to have like a noose in his bed that may not necessarily have the same feeling. But what the idea behind this is that even though it's true, a person who commits eshet ish, that's the punishment. Strangulation, but there is a time when a person gets killed by the sword, beheaded, and that's when you're mored b'malchus. If you rebel against the king, then the punishment is beheading. That's what the punishment is in Jewish law. And therefore the symbolism, as the Mefarshim explained of the sword, is that the sin would not have been by taking Michal, that it would have been committing adultery, but it would have been that I am rebelling against the king, against David, and therefore I deservedly would get this punishment of cherev, of the sword. Now before we continue with the next pasuk, even according to the explanations that say that, they were together, he had the sword, he never touched her, and now he's so happy, he was happy, he was able to withstand this trial and tribulation, but now he's crying because he's parting from this test. There's a different issue. Actually, this is Tosfot, and the Gemara and Shabbos asked the question that even though clearly, according to the commentaries, he did not touch her, there's a separate prohibition of halacha called yichud,
right,
which means you're not allowed to seclude. You're not allowed to be in the same room. And believe it or not, this is a question that is found in the Gemara. Well, Tosfos asked the question, that how is it possible that we're saying that, okay, there was such, he was so great, she was so great, but there's a problem of yichud. Because the simple explanation is, what choice did they have? I mean, after all, again, if the king forced you to do so, what choice? But Tosfot says that a possible answer is Vahaya Pasuach Lurishus Harabin.
Oh, because they get the door open.
That would happen, right. Shalohaya Mishum Yichud. Because of this, there'd be no problem of Yichud, that they had some type of connection to the public thoroughfare. Right.
And it, he could have lived in his house.
Probably what happened was he had his own bed and he had a sword right next to his bed. He was probably a soldier, but the significance of the sword, he gazed upon it and thought, you know what, I better not do anything. But so according to some of the commentaries, as you talk about this idea that it's no longer a problem of yichud, there's a dispute which is worthwhile knowing and actually has halakhic ramifications which actually apply nowadays. According to the opinion of the Rashba, it's sufficient just as long as the door is unlocked. Even if the door is completely shut, as long as the door is unlocked, there's no longer a problem of yichud, of being secluded. According to the more stringent opinion of the Rabbi Akiva Eiger, it's necessary to keep the door open. Now, in addition to the
whole... Fresh air should come in.
Something along those lines.
Keep it open and locked. Unlocked. But they say keep it physically open, that fresh air would walk in.
Exactly. That's how Rabbi Akiva Eiger explains it.
Now,
the reason why this actually has, in a more positive spin of yichud, there is a time in halacha that we require yichud, and that is on the day of a wedding. When it comes to the day of a wedding, it's necessary to have yichud, so that the new husband and wife, the bride and groom, should be secluded in a room. And therefore, according to many of the mafarshim, it's necessary the yichud room should not just be shut, but according to the opinion of the these other opinions, it should be, the door should be locked. The reason why not everyone holds in the, let's say you find a door which does not have a lock, since there are Edim outside, and therefore they know not to go in or let anyone in or out, that may be enough to not require a lock. But nonetheless, that's a little halakha
maisa. Can I add a little frivolity to this?
Yes.
Okay, Jeannie, with everything going so much to the right, when it comes to weddings, you know, separate coat room, separate seating,
separate floors.
The next thing's going to be separate yichud room.
What?
The men who are aided, because women are allowed to be outside the door, do they get a mitzvah for being an aid at a wedding?
They miss out on the shmorg. That's the biggest problem. Because everyone else is eating.
Oh,
so they miss out on the soup or the salad. Well, you're helping them being mekayem a mitzvah, so you're certainly, it's a nice thing to do. It's a kibbutz for sure. Okay, so however we want to paint the picture of who Paltiel ben Laish was, he was crying, but now he's no longer in the picture, and now David is finally, after many years, with Michal. Pasuk Yud Zayin. Udvar Avner Hoya im Zikne Yisrael Lamor. Pasuk Yud Zayin. So Avner, the words of Avner were sent to the Ziknei Israel, to the elders of Israel, saying, Gam Tamol, yesterday, Gam Shulshom, the day before that, which comes to the word Shalosh, which today, yesterday, and the day before that, is three. Hayisem Mavakshim as David Lamelech Aleichem. I wanted David to be a king over you, which is a statement that, it's not that I wanted you to be a king now, and this is just a new thought, and I'm hot and cold, but this is something which is always on the forefront of my mind. V'atan now asu, and now do. We should do it. Let it be. You should be the king. Ki Hashem Amar El David Lamer. After all, Hashem said to David, saying, David Avi Hoshia as Am Yisrael, that Biyad David Avi in the hands of David my servant Hoshia as Am Yisrael. He'll be the savior for my nation Israel. Miad Plishtim, from the Plishtim, Miad Kol Oyvehem, or anyone else who are adversaries or enemies to the Jewish people. So this pasuk points out, as we look in the Masudas David, this is really what we were saying before, the Ata, so and now do so. Why the Ata now? Why should you be a king now? Why not a few weeks before? Why is he saying this only now that Michal is in the picture? Says the Masudas David, Ratzalomer, Hoyo Bashal, Bashal, Nasulo, now that you have a woman by the name of Michal, but look how Mesudas David calls her. He doesn't even call her by her name. He calls her the daughter of Shaul. Now that you're married to her, Gam hu nechsha mibei Shaul. It's considered as though you are now part of Bei Shaul, which he said this is the whole plan of David. That why should you show allegiance and favoritism toward Ishbosheth? Because he is a child to Shaul. Well, guess what? So is Michal. And now that Michal is married to me, we're always married.
It's political.
Yeah. I mean, the psukim do say that they love each other,
no,
but this move, right, now this is a political move that everyone sees that there's no reason, there's no logical reason for you to side with Ishbosheth. The only reason why before is because after all, Shaul, well, now you have the print, the queen, right? Since, which, let me see. Where are we? Oh, we're in the Masudas David?
Yeah.
It usually means, it could mean since, or it could be now. There's different ways it could be read based on the context.
Since Michal is the daughter of
Shaul. Right, something, that's right. But that's the idea of what Masudas David is saying, that now, of all times, V'atasu, now you're the king. There's no reason, there's nothing that should be holding you back from this position. Pasuk Yotes. V'yadaber gam Avner ba'azni Binyamin. And Avner also spoke into the ears of Binyamin. What do you mean, also? What's the difference? They're Jewish people like the rest. Because, of course, we recall that Shaul came from which Shevet?
Binyamin.
He came from Binyamin. So which tribe would have more of a reason to want to side with Ishbosheth? Binyamin. And therefore, Avner says, not only are the Jewish people going to side with you now, but even I will be speaking to the people from Binyamin, and they're also going to side with you. V'yelech gam Avner l'daber ba'azni David b'chevron. So Avner went to speak directly to David, not through a messenger, but to his ears in Chevron, is kol asher tov b'enei Yisrael, with regard to all that was good in the eyes of Israel, v'enei kol beis Binyamin. So again, it's not just what's good in the eyes of b'enei Yisrael, but again, he sets apart and singles out that it will also be good v'enei kol beis Binyamin, even though you would think that because Shaul comes from them, but it's not a problem anymore. Because even the people from Beis Binyamin will now gaze upon Michal and say, so what? So the queen comes from Binyamin. So therefore, it's not like our power has been diminished, taken away. Is that so? Pasuk Chav is on the top of page 218. V'yavo Avner el David Chevron. So Avner went to David Chevron, where he was. Yito Esther Menashe. And he's not a fool. He's not going to go by himself. He went with at least a little bit of bodyguards, 20 of them. So how did their response? So David made a wonderful feast for Avner and those people. He made a mishnah. He made a nice party. So this is a tremendous reason for celebration. Not only am I king, that's not even the reason, but the fact is, now finally we're going to have Achdus, we'll be unified as one. Pasuk Chav. Vayomer Avner el David. So Avner turned to David and said, Akumo, can you please, is it okay if I get up? Ve'elech and I'll go. Ve'ekvotza, I'll Adoni Amelech, and I'll gather up, and I'll go to people as Kol Yisrael, v'yichrasu itcha bris, and I'll establish with you a bris. So, who initiated this relationship, this covenant? It was Avner that initiated it. We'll explain the significance of that in a second. You will be a king whatever your heart desires. You will be a king for all. Yishalach David as Avner. So David said, no problem, I will send you out. And not only that, Vayelech Bishalom. And he sent him out, and he went Bishalom in peace. And the Mefarshim explained that there's a difference between saying go Bishalom and go Lishalom. Well, what's the difference? It's just a little letter. Well, there's a huge difference between the two. The fact is that we learned this out from Yisro, that when it came to Yisro said to Moshe, Lech Lishalom, and which meant, what ended up meaning, you should go to peace, which means you should go and you should come back. But when you say Bishalom, for some reason it means go, and it's a one-way ticket. Don't come back. And the reason is, it doesn't necessarily mean that go and you're not going to come back because you're going to die, which of course is what happens, but what could mean is the following. Avner did create some type of a treaty between himself and David. However, not everyone was going to be as equally as receptive to him joining David's party, especially when it came to Yoav, in which his brother Asael was murdered or killed by Avner. And therefore, I can't allow this to happen. And therefore, maybe what David was saying of Lech Bishon, go in peace, was you should not come back, because if you come back, you're going to be in danger. Because if the brothers of Asael, namely Yoav, if they see you in our camp, they're going to kill you. And therefore, I accept our treaty, but I recommend that you go Bishalom, in peace, and that you should not come back, because if you come back, it's only going to be dangerous for you, because not everyone, and he wasn't there at the time, as we're going to see, he was out on the road fighting the Plishtim. So at this time, he's saying you should go, but I don't recommend you coming back, because not everyone is going to take you so kindly. Asael was a very, he was a very fast person, and it was brought down that between this, when there was a war, he went ahead and he said, I'm going to kill Avner. That was his whole message, that was his whole goal. And he went and... Avner was at the time siding with Ish-Boshes, which was the opposite, with the enemies of David's camp. So he said, I'm going to get rid of Avner, I'm going to kill him. So Asael, who was extremely fast, he was able to catch up to him. But then Avner turned around and said, if I'm going to kill you, you better stop. Go and maybe attack another soldier, or take a soldier back with you as a captive. But if you keep chasing me, I'm going to kill you. And it brings down that he took his spear, possibly the backside of the spear, and he rammed it into him, into his fifth rib, and it went right through him and killed him. So,
was that Shaul's son?
No.
No, he's not Shaul's son.
His nephew.
Oh, his nephew.
David's nephew.
The son of his sister, right?
Right.
Saruya.
Right.
But this, so now. But you can imagine Yoav and Suriah, who was maybe on the same level as Avner, but just on the opposite camp, right? Enemies of each other. His brother was murdered by this guy, Avner. Murdered, we'll discuss that next week. But he's not going to tolerate this Avner character walking around in his camp. Forget it. I want to kill him, because he killed my brother. And therefore, what David was saying over here is, it's not recommended that you stay. If you stay, there's a very good chance Yoav is going to kill you. So therefore, Lech Bishalom. And the other idea which is brought down over here, Bishalom means that you've already completed your task here. Bishalom, You have gone in peace. We have completed that which you needed to accomplish. When you're lit, you're going to something, which means that you have not yet necessarily completed and accomplished what you need to accomplish. And therefore, that's the symbolism over here. The other Mefarshim explained, brought down the Nodeh B'Yehuda, a story based on what we just had, that it's significant to understand and to recall who initiated the covenant over here. Was it David or was it Avner? So the Pasuk said, as we saw in Pasuk Aleph, he said, let me leave, David, with your permission, and I'll spread the word. I'll have a covenant with you. So who initiated it? Avner. So it's interesting that it's unbelievable question that was brought down in the Shaus and Shuas Nodeh B'Yehuda. If you send a messenger to do some type of a task, I need something, and I ask you to please go and get something for me. Please help me. And unfortunately, tragically, that person dies on the road. So he says, Sheesh alham shaleya chiyuv tainus v'tshuva al mashigara. I didn't cause the person to die, but since he had some benefit, the benefit was mine that I sent him, so indirectly, if I didn't send that individual, if I didn't need it, then he would never have gone, he never would have died. It's not my fault, I'm not going to be punished for it, but there is a small, small element in which you need to do tshuva, responsibility, right? Not that you should carry that guilt with you your whole life, but the significance is that since it was for your benefit and that person died, there is some guilt that falls upon you that you should do tshuva and fast for. The unbelievable Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara says, I'm going to quote, it's only a couple of lines. It says, She'avon harigas nov ira kohanim, because of the sin in which David committed, in which Nov, the city of Kohanim, were killed, Sha'al Yado Negram Harigasam, that through David they were killed. Well, David didn't actually kill them, but David needed some bread. All he wanted was to eat. But according to the Gemara holds that even though he didn't really do it, it was not him, it was Doeg Hadomi, who was sent by the king at the time, Sha'al. But since he benefited from it, he needed the food. Therefore, the Gemara says there is some responsibility placed upon David. And then it says that not only that, but there's also an element of responsibility for the death of Shaul and the three sons, because that, again, is all directly connected to the destruction of Nov Ir Kohanim, the death of all those innocent Kohanim. So David is held very small level, but some element of responsibility for that. However, explains in Nodeh B'Yehuda, interestingly enough, that even though we know that Avner is going to die, which we'll see next week, sounds like a lot of fun, Avner is going to be killed, it does not mention anywhere in that Gemara that David is held responsible for that. And the reason, as he explains, is because who initiated the covenant? It was not me, it was not David, it was Avner. And therefore, David did this on purpose so that the shlichus, that now that he is going, let me go out and spread this word, it's no longer my obligation, it's no longer my responsibility. And therefore, explains to Nodeh B'Yehuda, in the event that someone does something, but they're doing it for their own benefit, even though you sent them, but they're really doing it for their own benefit, then there's absolutely no responsibility attached to you for that, as we see from this story. Unfortunately, we'll stop here, and we look forward to seeing everyone.